The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salner, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, where we're going to try to get through as many of your email questions as we can today. Jim's been frantically rummaging through the pile. He hasn't shared with me the topics of these emails, which
I don't
is
know
typical,
what the topics
but,
are gonna be.
But we're going to get through. I think our target every show now is five, so if we can get through five, it's a success. If we get more than that, it's a huge success. If it's less than that, it's a typical day at the Retirement and IRA Show. So we'll do the best that we can. If, as you're listening to questions, you're wondering how you can send in your own question, the best way to do that would be to head to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or actually, chrishelps.com gets you to the same spot, C-H-R-I-S-H-E-L-P-S.com. So either one of those will get you to the spot you're looking for. And from there, there's a contact form. You can submit questions directly that way. That's the preference or the preferred method, because then both Jim and I get a copy of it. So I get as much warning about the question as he does. Although most of the questions in these piles we've gotten weeks or maybe sometimes months ago, because our pile's a little deep. Every once in a while, we'll have a particularly interesting question or timely question where we'll pull it out of the order and answer it very quickly after it's been submitted. But the other way, you can actually call into the show live when we broadcast live. The live broadcast starts usually between 1 and 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time on Tuesdays is the current schedule. To call into the show, it's 970-530-0556. You'll get a hold of either Shauna or Laura, and they'll head up to the studio and let us know that there's a call on the line, and we can get you on right away, and you can jump the queue, if you will. So, Jim, are you prepared with our lineup of five email questions for this show?
I'm trying. Trying.
Or just one that we can start with?
Oh, yeah, we got one we can start with. Did you want to tell people how they can call live if they're listening live?
Just did.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
Perhaps I should pay attention.
Perhaps.
Are you shitting me?
No, I'm not.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. Okay, well. Yeah.
Wow. That's what I'm thinking, too. Wow. He was very focused on reading through the pile of emails to see what we were going to answer today, okay. Which, you know, a normally produced show, this would happen before we went on the recording, but
Oh, we got handed a note.
Do we have a call already? Oh, perfect. Well, why don't we tackle that first?
Tackle a live call?
Yeah, let's tackle that call. So Laura can just go down and transfer it up to me directly. And we'll take that, and then that'll give you some time to rummage through your pile a little bit more.
I've narrowed it down. I'm getting there.
Got it. So, okay. Yeah. So the topic has something to do with transfer, rollover, conversion of IRA. So that's
a broad topic.
We'll know in just a second what that is. So here we go. Hi, this is Chris and Jim on the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks for calling in. Do we have George? We'll call you on the line.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good afternoon. We're doing well. Thanks a lot for calling in. The shows are a lot more exciting and active when we have live callers. So, plus it gets Jim off the hook from trying to dig through the pile and find an appropriate question to answer. So,
especially when I wait till the last minute to dig through the pile.
Exactly. So, George, if you don't mind sharing, and you don't have to, what state are you calling from?
Kentucky?
No.
North Carolina.
That's close.
To Kentucky.
That's close. Both have the same state bird. Do you know what your state bird is?
Would that be the cardinal?
It would be the cardinal.
And they both have the same one?
Yeah.
That's not very original.
Remember I told you all around there's like four or five states that all have the cardinal down there? So that's part of the reason I might move to Kentucky. Cardinal's my favorite bird.
You can move to North Carolina and meet that too. So.
I do have a friend who's moving to Greensboro, North Carolina. George, you familiar with that area?
Yes, went up there to visit the college for our daughter. She did not choose to go there, but they have a nice craft brewery up there that we frequent. So.
Okay. Well, he left Colorado 3 weeks ago and sent me a text just complaining about the humidity.
Yes, it is pretty brutal.
He's starting to find that out, but he said it is beautiful in the Greensboro area, just far more moist than he was used to in Colorado. But what can we help you with, George?
Well, I'm trying to simplify my portfolio, and I believe I know the answers to my questions, but I want to double check with someone who's a little more informed than I am, so I do not make a mistake and end up with a penalty or anything like that. So I have a few IRAs with different custodians, so want to consolidate down, so looking to do a direct transfer between custodians, and I'm pretty sure I could do that as often as I'd like. There's no limitations on that. I also want to do a partial conversion of an IRA from a traditional to a Roth. Again, I think that you can do that as many times as you want. And then there's a possibility I may be changing jobs where I'd be doing a rollover of my 401k to an IRA. And that, I believe, you're limited to once in a 12-month period. My question are these three separate events, or is there a certain order I should execute them in?
Do you want to tackle that, or do you want me to tackle that?
Well, I'll clarify one thing that you'll need. How old are you, George?
57.
Okay. Not really going to affect the three things he mentioned, but
no.
Just in case I'm suspecting this is going to head off on a little bit of a tangent.
No, I can be brief on this.
Oh, well, let's prove it.
You know me, Pithy's my middle name.
Let me see that happen.
Why don't you start again with your first question and then stop after the first question?
That would be the direct transfer between custodians from an IRA to an IRA to collapse them.
Correct. And you wanted to know how many you can do in a year?
He suspects
he
wants.
You could do that as many times as you want. I just want to confirm that.
You are 100% correct.
Yes.
A direct transfer from one IRA to another IRA can be done as many times as you want.
Then the second he was thinking of taking a part of a traditional IRA and converting it to a Roth, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And you wanted to know how many times you can do that in a year?
Well, I believe that is also unlimited. You do as many times as you want.
That is correct. You can do as many conversions as you want. You can even do the conversions as a 60-day rollover as many times as you want, which confuses people. Because most people know you can only do one 60-day rollover per 365 days, not per year. Well, it's technically per year, but if you did one on December 31st of 2019, you have to wait all the way for one full year, December 31st of 2020, before you can do another 60-day rollover, unless you are moving from an IRA to a Roth IRA. You can do that as a 60-day rollover as many times as you want as well. So conversions, just remember this, George, they want your taxes. They're not going to restrict how often you convert. Whether you do that as a trustee-to-trustee transfer, where you move it directly from one IRA to the Roth IRA, or as a 60-day rollover where you call up your IRA, say, hey, send me out some cash, and then you take, as long as you get it within 60 days, up to 60 days to put it in the Roth IRA, you can do that as many times as you want as well.
However,
great.
The reason I asked your age, what if he was over 70 and a half, Jim?
He's doing a conversion. Well, he has to take his RMD first.
There you go. There you go. So there's
well, he sounded younger than 70.
Well, I know, but I was anticipating the tangent. You didn't even take the bait.
Oh, no.
The tangent, of course, you always have to remember if you're out there listening to this as well. If you have reached the age where you must take RMDs, you must take the RMD out as a distribution before doing the conversion.
Any conversion.
Any type of conversion rollover. It's got to be, you cannot roll over, which all conversions are a form of a rollover. You cannot roll over the RMD. And the first things out of your IRA, the first monies out are considered RMDs. So you cannot roll over those first monies. Once you've satisfied the RMD, if there is one, then you can proceed and roll over additional money, whether it's converting it or rolling it over. Either one. So it doesn't affect you. So you're still in that, you not have to worry about that phase. But I just wanted to mention that just in case someone else is listening who might be a bit older than you.
That was Chris going down a rabbit hole like he usually does, George. You know him.
Well, if you're not going to take the bait, I have to.
And you had
that's why you only get a few questions answered every show.
Yeah, because Chris never shuts up. He goes on and on and on and on
George,
and on.
George has got it figured out. He knows the problem.
He's blaming you.
Whatever. Okay, the third one, though.
What was your third question, George?
Changing jobs, doing a rollover from a 401k to one of these IRAs, limited to once every 12 months.
No, that one you're wrong on. You can move money from a 401k to an IRA anytime you want, as often as you want, even if it's a direct rollover or an indirect rollover. Whenever money leaves a 401k, it's always called a rollover. Mm-hmm. That just gets confusing to people. It's not a trustee-to-trustee transfer, technically. That is between IRAs. But don't worry about the vernacular that's being used. Just worry about the concept. When you move money from a 401k to an IRA, you can do that as often as you want. It is not limited to once per year. You can even do it as a 60-day rollover where you call up the 401k, say, hey, send me my money. You get your money, and then you can put it back into a Roth IRA. Now, I don't recommend you do that because they will automatically withhold 20% of the 401k distribution. So you would always want to do it as what is called a direct rollover, or sometimes incorrectly referred to as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. But you would want to move the money directly from the 401k to the IRA or to the Roth IRA as a conversion, but move it directly from the 401k to the IRA, and you can do as many of those as you want in a year.
Although,
gotcha.
Maybe, and I haven't seen this because most are not like this, but could there not be a 401k that has distribution rules?
Oh, absolutely. The IRS won't.
The IRS won't limit it. So there's not a rule. The 401k might say, no, you can only ask for money once.
And I've seen that all the time. I see that more than Chris, George, because Chris works on the planning department. I'm more involved in the everyday client relationship. So I have seen clients whose 401ks limit them to one movement per year. So you wouldn't necessarily want to do a partial transfer from the 401k. You would just move it all. But some 401ks can limit mm-hmm. how often they'll let you access money from their accounts. Right. But the government does not limit the movement of money from a 401k to an IRA or from a 401k to a Roth IRA.
Yep.
Yep. Our company does have limits on distributions. So okay. I'll look into that.
Yeah, so that might
so
be worse.
These three different actions, is there any specific order I should do them in, or it really doesn't matter?
Really doesn't matter. It I guess ultimately depends on what your goal is and how you want to structure it. Now, I would say, and we're not quite to that point in the year yet, but the conversion needs to be done in 2019 to count as a 2019 conversion. Whereas the other money, because it's moving directly from one account to another, it is not going to have a tax implication. The conversion will. So you want to make sure you get the conversion done, in my opinion, first, so it does get recorded in 2019, and you don't wait to the end of the year where it gets pushed out.
That makes sense.
Yep.
And
the only
other thing I would want to add, you know me,
I'm
going to take a page out of Chris's playbook and go down a rabbit hole here. One other quick thing. When you move money from a 401k to an IRA, years ago, you had to move it into what was called a conduit IRA. And you'll often hear that still being used. And unfortunately, you hear a lot of advisors insisting you have to move it to what is called a conduit IRA. Years ago, and when I say years ago, it was probably as little as a decade ago, Chris. I can't remember when they changed the law. If you were going to move that or potentially move that money back into a 401k, you had to move the money into what was called a conduit IRA and not mix it with any other IRA money. Well, a lot of uninformed advisors thought that was the rule, that a 401k could not be mixed with existing IRA money. And I know on the forums we follow, Chris, to this day, we still find advisors insisting that 401ks must not be mixed with other IRA money. It has to be kept separately. That rule has gone the way of the dodo bird. I believe in 2002 is where that rule finally went the way of the dodo bird. But there is no need for anything like that. So if you hear anyone uttering this, George or any listener, that you cannot mix a 401k with IRA money and you have to open a conduit IRA and keep just 401k money in there, tell that person that rule is no longer applicable.
Close.
I nailed it. George, how did I do on that?
Anonymity.
Oh, a longtime listener and a showboat at that. That's it. I'm done. Move on. Next.
Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy the show immensely. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. Thank you. Nice to have you on the phone call. Bye-bye.
So we had a comedian.
Yeah, perfect. That's our perfect caller. They get us. They've got a good question. Helps people. And they mock you all in the same phone call.
I could say anonymity, but not that
but
other
not
one.
Applicable?
No, the other word he said. He said the one that is the fish.
Anemone?
That one. Mm. Isn't that what he said?
No, I don't know now. Because I don't, yeah.
I think he was talking about the fish.
Maybe.
I think. I don't know. Anyways, it was the word that I can't say. Okay, we have a couple of questions here. Actually, quite a few questions here. Here is one from June. So not too long ago, June 8th, and it begins, Jim and Chris, mm-hmm. we are considering moving to Colorado. My suggestion, listener, don't.
Oh, come on.
We got enough. 10,000 people a month are moving to Colorado. Anyways, if you insist and you're going to come to Colorado, we are considering moving to Colorado. My wife and I are age 70 and appear to qualify for the $24,000 per year income tax subtraction. But I cannot find if a public pension income from states other than Colorado will qualify for this benefit. Your assistance would be most appreciated. Hopefully he wasn't waiting too long for this. Well, he was. He was waiting since June 8th. So 2 months for this answer. Hopefully he's still moved. The answer, listener,
well, don't answer. Let's add a little context to this in case people don't understand the question.
Oh, go ahead.
Which is, in some states, well, some states have no income tax. So therefore, you don't have to worry about the taxability of pensions or Social Security or things like that. It's only a federal issue that applies everywhere. Some states fully tax all of that type of income. If it's taxable at the federal level, it's going to be taxable at the state level as well. And then some states have special rules where they will exempt certain retirement income, like Social Security or pensions, up to certain amounts. And Colorado is one of those states. That's what they're referring to. That's that 24,000 figure. So that is a Colorado-specific question. But your state, if you're listening from elsewhere, you'd have to check into your state and see what the laws are in regards to this topic there. Hopefully you're in a state with no income tax. There's one of those just north of us here, but you have to live there to enjoy that. Wyoming is what I'm talking about, but not that I'm disparaging Wyoming. I'm from Wyoming, but you couldn't live in Colorado and benefit from that. You're going to be playing by the Colorado rules. So now Jim can answer the question now that I've hopefully added some context to what they're asking.
So the short answer, listeners, since Chris went on and on and on like he usually does, yes, you can exempt pension income from other states.
Yep.
So you will get to exclude 24,000 of your pension income from Colorado income taxation.
And it's a total, including it's all pensions and all Social Security retirement income. So, or disability income, actually, if you're on Social Security disability for any reason. So not 24,000 per pension. You don't get a shield.
Oh, I didn't mean to say it that way. Did I say it that way?
Not really, but I just wanted to make clear that that was the case. It's an overall limit. So if you have Social Security and a pension, some of your income is likely to be taxed at the state level. Just FYI. So that was a good one. We haven't had that question before. And we could have what, 50 of those questions, because we get a different one of those, different version of those from every state. So what have you got next for us, sir?
I'm reading one real quickly to make sure I can answer all three of his questions. So say something while I'm reading this.
Well, if you want to call in like our first listener did, 970-530-0556. If you're streaming off of iTunes on the podcast, that's not going to work because we're not live at that moment. But if you're streaming live right now, we live stream on the Mixlr app, which you can access right from our website, jimhelps.com. There's a link, a little player right there. When we're streaming live, you can see it happening and you can listen in there. You can also stream live from that Mixlr app. And Mixlr is a word they made up, I guess. It's spelled M as in Mary, I-X-L-R. That's what you're going to Google. And they've got a website. And if you use the app, you'll get alerted every time we go live. So that's, since our schedule isn't precise in that we're live at the same time like we should be every single week, you'll get a little alert when we go live. I think we've got it tightened up where we're usually on within about a 30-minute window is when we start, between 1 and 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time on Tuesdays. But that's handy if you are an avid podcast listener, you want to listen live instead of waiting for the podcast itself to come out. There's a delay. There's about a 10-day delay from when we record and live stream these until they come out on the podcast software. So if you want the information as soon as humanly possible, live streaming is the way to go.
Okay. We have some questions also from June. I seem to have reached the June part of...
Well, at least it's still 2019. We've gotten through all the 2018 questions.
Yes, this is... Well, no, there's probably a 2018 one buried in this pile somewhere. But yes, this is from June 14th, 2019, from a Minnesota listener.
Okay.
Who signs his name George. So it could actually be George from Minnesota or George from Minnesota. In other words, it could be it could be a fake name or his real name. We don't know.
We don't know. That's the mystery of it. That's what keeps it anonymous. Yeah.
It says, "Hi, Jim and Chris. I have several annuity questions. He has four. I'm pretty sure I can answer three. One of them, I'm not totally sure on the answer. So I don't want to pretend I know the answer. I will attempt to answer it. But one of them, I'm not 100% sure on." So he begins. "With inside an IRA, is the IRA owner allowed to purchase an annuity which names their spouse as the annuitant? Or is joint annuity with survivorship rights the only way to cover a spouse with a QLAC?" There's a lot he's asking in this question, mm-hmm. listeners. So let me, and he begins by saying annuity questions, SPIA inside an IRA. So he begins in the first part of his question talking about a single premium immediate annuity, and then he ends with a QLAC, qualified longevity annuity contract. So he's talking about two different annuities here. So I'm going to break question one into two questions.
Good
so
approach.
He actually has five questions then, technically. So his first question is in reference to a SPIA, S-P-I-A, single premium immediate annuity. It is where you take a pool of money, listeners, give it to the insurance company, and pool your risk of longevity with hundreds of thousands of other people, if not millions. It depends how big the insurance company is, I suppose. Of other people. You pool all this money together. The insurance company is going to guarantee you a certain amount of money every year for the rest of your life. Whether you live long enough to get twice your money back or five times your money back, it doesn't matter.
Or half your money back.
Or half your money back. Exactly. It will pay you until the day you die. So he asks, within the IRA, is the IRA owner allowed to purchase an annuity? And again, he's talking about a SPIA because he made that clear in the first... You guys don't see his email. He put that in the title that the first question had to do with the SPIA, which names only their spouse as the annuitant. I got news for you, listener. You don't even have to name the spouse as the annuitant. For those who don't know, there's always three parties to an annuity. There is the contract owner. There is the annuitant whose life is used to determine the payout. That's what the annuitant is. And then there's the beneficiary, and there's actually a fourth one I forgot to mention, the insurance company itself. So there's four parties to an annuity. Your spouse need not be one of them. There's no law that says your spouse. It's not like a pension plan that has ERISA protection that does mandate that.
Yes, but I think the reason he's asking is he wants to name his spouse the annuitant. He's asking if he can do that within his own IRA.
You could name the spouse. Yes, you could inside your IRA if that's what you were asking. Yes, you could name your spouse as the annuitant. Most people, they will own the policy and their life will set the payout option, so they will become the annuitant as well. What you can't have is a jointly owned annuity inside your IRA, but you can have his second question, Chris. Or is a joint annuity with survivorship the best or only way to cover a spouse with a QLAC? So now he's gone to a different type of annuity, a single premium immediate annuity, is where you put the money in, and usually 30 days later, it begins paying the income out. By law, it will begin paying the income out no less than 13 months after you buy it, but most will begin paying out immediately, hence the name immediate annuity. So you put the money in August like it is now, it will begin paying you in September. If you name your wife as the annuitant, the payouts will be based on her sex and her longevity. So you have to keep that in mind when you structure this. But you then go and ask about a QLAC, Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract. That annuity, listeners, is a little different. That annuity, you put the money in, and it usually begins paying out well into the future. By law, it has to begin paying out no later than age 85. But most QLACs will sit there and stew, if you will, for 10, 15, 20 years. And while the money is in the QLAC, it is exempt from required minimum distributions. So it can help lower the required minimum distributions of your IRA at least until age 85, when the QLAC must begin paying out income. Anyways, his question is, do I have to structure it as a joint with survivorship? It's actually joint with rights of survivorship, and that does not refer to the ownership of the annuity. A QLAC is owned inside an IRA, and I just said the IRA, any annuity inside an IRA can only be owned by the individual. It cannot be right. owned jointly. So what he's talking about, folks, isn't the ownership of the QLAC. The ownership of the QLAC will always be based on the IRA owner. They're the only ones who can own an IRA inside their IRA. He's talking about the payout. If the payout of an annuity is based on one life, Chris, as opposed to two lives, dollar for dollar, what does the one life annuity offer more of than the two life annuity?
Well, it's going to, excuse me, it's going to pay more per month or per year, however you have it structured. On a single life annuity, given the same amount put into the annuity, because when there's a couple and there's two lives involved, it increases the likelihood of longevity, and that's what the insurance company is afraid of. So they'll reduce the payment promise for a joint life. So there's a choice there, but he clearly is looking to make sure whatever annuity he chooses has got some payment that goes to his spouse.
Correct. So if you want to make sure your spouse is guaranteed this money as long as you live, as long as either of you is alive, not just you, then you must name the payout option. Remember, the ownership of an IRA annuity can only be the individual who owns the IRA, but the payout can be two lives. And that's called joint with rights of survivorship. That's what that payout is. And you would name your wife as a joint beneficiary, so a joint recipient of the payout option. And she'll probably be named as a joint annuitant as well. And what will happen is that payment will continue for both your lives. It's not required. You don't have to do it that way. You can structure the QLAC inside the IRA to cover just your life, and that gives you more money, or you and your wife more money while you're alive. Single lives always, dollar for dollar, get more money than a joint payout, because the joint payout is insuring two lives. And if there's an age difference between you and your wife, say one of you is 10 years younger than the other, it doesn't matter which one, you or her is 10 years younger, that 10-year younger person is going to cause significantly lower income payments than the single life annuity, because it's going to be based, the payouts are going to be based pretty much or driven, not based entirely, but driven strongly by the age of the youngest income beneficiary. And the younger you are, the less money you get. So these are a lot of variables that we look at when we structure QLACs or SPIA payments. We look at longevity of both parties. We look at the age of both parties. We look at whether it's an IRA annuity or a non-IRA annuity. The income needs the couple is trying to protect. Is it an income need that only exists while both spouses are alive and goes away if either one dies? Or is it an income need that continues forever, even after the death of the first spouse? Or is it an income need that becomes magnified if one of these spouses predeceased the other? These are a lot of the measures that you should be factoring in as you figure out how to structure this. But no, there is no rule that you name your wife as annuitant or even as an income beneficiary, but it is something that definitely needs to be considered. And you do ask, is the best way to cover the spouse to name him or her as a joint income beneficiary with rights of survivorship? Yes, that is the best way, or the only way, really, as far as I'm concerned, to cover the spouse if that's your main aim. Would you agree, disagree?
The cleanest as well, although the fact that he was asking about an annuity with her as the annuitant, he might have been thinking one for him with him and one for her. So if he passes, the one to her is going to continue.
Yes, remember, naming your spouse as an annuitant on a SPIA does not guarantee her an income benefit if the income is going to you. If you own the policy and named it, it's inside your IRA, so the income is going to you. You're the income beneficiary. And you named her as an annuitant. Just because you pass away doesn't mean the income in that SPIA continues to your wife merely because she's the annuitant. The income will die with you unless you got a period certain, which means it will pay for a certain period whether you live that long or not, or if you got a joint income beneficiary with your wife, in other words, named her as joint income with right of survivorship, joint income, then it would continue. Merely naming her as an annuitant does not guarantee her any income at your death on a SPIA.
And that's, did he clarify what his concerns were? No. He asked a lot of mechanical questions. Mm-hmm. What he didn't include, and this is what makes me nervous, is what exactly he's trying to accomplish.
Right.
We're answering kind of the mechanics of what you could do, but it's hard for us to say, oh yeah, that's a good path, or no, you should do it this other way or something, because we're not sure what he's trying to accomplish here. I think he's got concerns about RMD issues or something when he's got her named as the annuitant, or what happens when he passes and this he's got an annuity in
here.
But without knowing what his concern or goal might be, we're just be guessing as to solutions here.
Right.
So it's but mechanically you can do some of those things.
That was his first question, which we turned into two questions. His second question, which is technically his third question, is a QLAC the only type of annuity that can be purchased inside an IRA? No. You can own pretty much any type of annuity inside an IRA. However, IRA rules take precedence. So a traditional DIA, D-I-A, deferred income annuity, a deferred income annuity is a type of annuity where you put a lump sum of money in, just like a SPIA, single premium immediate annuity, except just like the name implies, the income is deferred. Mm-hmm. Every kulak is a dia, but every dia is not a kulak. A kulak was built upon a dia platform. A lot of people think, Chris, you cannot own a deferred income annuity inside an IRA.
Well, before kulaks were born, that was true.
No, it wasn't.
Well, it was true and have it work the way you want
Correct.
It to.
That's, the problem was, remember I said, listener, and George, Chris, oh, George, I could call you George.
You've called me lots of things, so George would be an improvement on
called
some of them.
Called you Piss once.
Yeah, exactly.
For those who don't know, you can go back and listen to that show where I morphed.
I'm not sure what you did, but it was offensive.
Well, Chris and Pete were on the show at the mm-hmm. same time. I yep. kept calling Pete Chris and Chris Pete. So my brain just summarized and looked at Chris and called him Piss. Just put both names together.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant.
It was a high spot in the retirement and IRA show.
Anyways, back to what I was getting at. Remember I prefaced this conversation by saying pretty much any IRA, excuse me, any annuity can be owned inside an IRA, but IRA rules will take precedence.
Right.
So prior to kulaks coming aboard, which the federal government created in 2010, of course, they announced them in 2010. The first right. one hit the market in 2015. Took a wallop 5 years to get these things off the ground. But what the government wanted to do is they realized a deferred income annuity was a pretty cool thing. People could put money away early in retirement to protect them later in retirement, pool that risk with thousands upon thousands of other people, back that risk with highly rated insurance companies, and remove the risk of longevity, or at least help mitigate the risk of outliving their money. They liked the idea of a DIA. That's what a DIA is. A deferred income annuity does all that. But the problem was most people had their money inside IRAs and 401ks. That's where most wealth is, which is a bad thing. We call that always taxable accounts here on the Retirement and IRA Show. And unfortunately, Chris, you see it like I do. 80, 85, 90, 95% or more of most people's money is locked up in always taxable accounts. So it limits tax planning opportunities. But it was also limiting, Chris, the ability for people to put DIAs inside their IRA because...
required minimum distributions.
Exactly. At 70 and a half, you were being forced to turn the income on in your DIA, and it defeated the purpose of protecting the older you. The 80, 85, 90-year-old you who needed the money. And the longer you let that money stew inside the DIA, the more you get. And let me tell you, you get a hell of a lot more. Each year you wait, your income goes up a lot. The reason being, mortality credits. Everyone in your annuity pool who dies before you, everybody thinks the money goes to the insurance company. It doesn't. It gets spread out amongst everyone else in the annuity pool who's still alive. That's called a mortality credit. All those mortality credits are building up the longer you live and defer the income in your DIA. Well, RMD rules. Remember, IRA rules take precedence. Boom. At 70 and a half, you had to turn the DIA on and it was defeating the purpose. So you could own a DIA inside an IRA, even to this day, but you would still have to start taking RMDs at 70 and a half. So the government created QLACs, Qualified Longevity Annuity Contracts, which are a form of a DIA mm-hmm. that if it has certain rules, and I won't get into them, we did a whole series of shows, Chris's favorite three shows, on QLACs, just go listen to them. And they'll explain to you how they work. But if you do a QLAC, it is a form of a DIA that can only be held in an IRA. You cannot buy a QLAC outside of an IRA. You cannot buy a QLAC inside a Roth IRA. You can only buy a QLAC inside a traditional IRA or 401k, but most 401ks don't even offer them. And it allows you to defer RMDs up to?
Age 85.
Age 85. After 85, you can't defer it anymore. You must, you can't even, it's not even an option.
Right.
It just pays out at 85.
Right.
So even if you forgot because you have dementia or Alzheimer's by then, it just turns on and starts paying out the money. So you can own a DIA inside an IRA. You can own a QLAC inside an IRA. You can own a variable annuity, a fixed indexed annuity. All of those can be owned inside an IRA. So the IRA wrapper doesn't really preclude any annuity that I know of for being owned inside it.
It's just that some don't mix well. Some mix like oil and water in there is all. So it's really is a question of appropriateness. If it would be appropriate or achieve your goals, what you're trying to do with a particular annuity in there. But as far as allowability, Jim is correct. There's actually very few things that are barred from ownership inside the IRA. Life insurance is one.
And collectibles is the other.
Collectibles. So, and people think, I know people who hold, gold or gold coins. Well, if it's a collectible, if it's classified as a collectible, you cannot. But there's certain
exemptions
for precious metals of certain. So there's other rules that spell out exactly what you can and can't do. But at the highest level, the most easy way to remember, no life insurance, no collectibles.
Okay. Perfect. So. Now he asks a question that I'm not quite sure, but I'll read it anyways, and I'll give what I think is my opinion, but I'm going to encourage him to get a hold of the state of Florida's Department of Insurance for clarification. He starts talking. He says, use the state of Florida as the resident state. So either he just wants to use Florida as an example, or this Minnesotian is thinking of relocating to Florida, becoming a Floridian. You like how I have those names of people's, since you got me my little map of what you call
Well, you're not
it.
Really looking at them, so.
No, but I studied it. I know what they
it's
call
it. It's not Minnesotian.
It is too a Minnesotian.
I don't think so.
Oh, now where's my map?
I think it's Minnesotan.
Is it?
Pretty sure.
Where's that map you bought me?
Well, I don't know.
Found it.
There you go.
We're both wrong. It's called Michigan Deer.
That's in Michigan.
Oh, never mind. What am I looking for?
Minnesota.
Oh, there it is. Wrong state. Minnesota. Damn it, you're right.
There we go.
Yep. What did I say?
Minnesotian.
That was close.
Yeah.
All right, so he says, using the state of Florida as the resident, the Florida Life and Health Guarantee Association, and for those who don't know what he's referencing, every state, insurance and annuities are insurance. Insurance is not regulated at the federal level. This surprises most people, Chris. Insurance is regulated at the state level, folks. So insurance companies, unfortunately, got to deal with 50 regulators, whereas most investments only deal with the SEC. But insurance is regulated at the state level. Every state has a guarantee association that runs a guarantee fund. And it receives money usually through premium taxes and mandatory contributions by insurance companies, which are all passed on to policyholders through higher premiums. But the funds are funded through money coming in from the insurance company, which again is coming from you through premium cost, premium surcharges. And that money, Chris, builds guarantees that the states will offer policyholders if the insurance company goes bust. But as the guarantee associations will tell you, unlike the federal government, which just prints money and backs everything, these funds, when they run out of money, they run out of money.
Right.
So there's no guarantee that the guarantees, no pun intended, they're offering will ever happen. Just keep that in mind. guarantee fund is not like FDIC insurance that the federal government is backing.
But it certainly takes away some of the individual company risk.
That was one of his questions.
If there's a complete collapse of the insurance market, that's one thing. But if it's just an individual company that runs into some difficulty, that's what this fund is for, to help support that.
Now, every state's guarantee association protects different things. And that's why I'm not sure about his, because he's talking about Florida, and I don't know what it is. In fact, I don't know what any is, except for the state of Colorado, which I have a pretty good working knowledge of, but I wouldn't hold myself out at all of being an expert. You really have to go to the website or call and ask them your question directly and get an answer straight from the horse's mouth. But he asks, Florida Health and Guarantee Association states that a fixed deferred annuity will be guaranteed up to the aggregate amount of $250,000. And if you have annuitized your contract, the maximum guarantee is $300,000. Can I interpret this as a $300,000 coverage for a SPIA purchased by a Florida resident from an agent licensed in Florida? Yes, what that means, and it doesn't mean you are going to get $300,000 back from an annuitized contract. What does that mean in English, folks? It means you put $300,000 into an annuity and you turned the income guarantee on. In other words, the insurance company was now promising you a lifetime stream of income, no longer $300,000. You couldn't get $300,000 out of the annuity. You could only get a lifetime stream of income. What the state of Florida is promising, according to this man, is they offer $300,000 of coverage on that. It is my understanding what the state is saying is, hey, we are going to look at the remaining income benefit available to you based on your life expectancy, and they're going to tell you the life expectancy that they give you. It's going to be based on their tables, and they'll define what table they use. They're not going to pick this randomly. It's all defined to you on their website. And they're going to look at the income you are supposed to receive and the remaining years of your life expectancy and do the math and figure out what that comes to, and they'll insure up to $300,000 of that. So if you were planning on receiving, based on your life expectancy, another $500,000, you're not going to get $500,000. But if the state determines, because by now the insurance company goes under and you are 95, you're not getting $300,000. They're going to say, hey, according to our calculation, you should have been dead 5 years ago. You owe us money. No, just kidding. But they're going to say, wow, you have a life expectancy of 2 and you were receiving $10,000 a year. Here's 20. It doesn't mean you walk away with $300,000. You have to understand how they do the calculation. So I really feel you need to clarify this with the state, that my understanding is correct. I could be wrong. I've been wrong in the past, and I could be wrong on this one. But that's my understanding of how that works. Then he wanted to know, does this coverage apply to QLACs? Yes, I don't see any reason why Florida would exempt QLACs, which are a form of a DIA. Mm-hmm. Remember, every QLAC is a DIA, but every DIA is not a QLAC.
Not necessarily.
So yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't apply to a QLAC. And then his final question. So again, on question 3, I think I have it down, but you might want to confirm what I just said on question 3, except for the QLAC part. I can't see them exempting QLACs. I'm sure they cover QLACs. Number four, in your opinion, does the type of guarantee offered, and I'm going to let you answer this, Pete, Chris. See, you had me going with this Pete thing because you kind of already answered this, so you can answer this again for him. In your opinion, does the type of guarantee offered by the Florida Guarantee Association for the purchase of an annuity mitigate the risk of insurer insolvency?
It definitely mitigates it. If you are other ways to mitigate this is to make sure you're choosing highly rated, strong insurance companies. And another way is if you're really worried about it, spread the risk around among multiple insurance companies instead of one massive annuity, buy three smaller annuities. It's a little more pain to go through the paperwork.
If you were to put $900,000 into a annuitized annuity in the state of Florida,
I wouldn't do it in one
company. Do it with three. Yeah. Now you got full coverage. It's not $300,000 per person. It's $300,000 per insurance company. So do company A, company B, company C. And if you want to mitigate, and I like how we used mitigate, not eliminate. And if you want to mitigate insurer risk, don't buy from a C-rated, D-rated, B-rated company. Limit yourself to A or higher, or A-plus, or A-plus-plus. Mm-hmm. You know, the stronger the company, the least likely or less likely it is the company will go under.
Right. And I believe, even if when we talk about going under, the assets of the insurance company, that doesn't necessarily mean they're zero. Just means they don't have enough to meet all their obligations. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the guarantee fund will have to make up all of the difference. Some of it might be coming from the insurance company itself. But these are such rare events, honestly. I mean, when is the last time you heard of a good-sized, solid insurance company going
under? I'm glad you said solid. I've heard of C, D-rated
low-end
companies,
and that's why they're
going
rated
under.
Like that.
Right,
yeah.
But an A-plus or an A-plus-plus rated company, God, I don't remember any, at least in my lifetime, and I'm only 25, going under. Don't look at me that way.
Yeah, no, I'm trying. Well, I'm racking my brain. I'm racking my brain. Thinking about even in the financial crisis, there was a couple of big annuity companies that were in the news. Because
and let's talk about AIG.
And that's where I was going.
But AIG's insurance arm
was fine.
Was fine.
Exactly.
It was the finance arm of AIG that got bailed out. Right. There was, and that's what pissed me off with politicians saying they had to bail out AIG to protect the insurance companies. That is a load of policyholders. That was a load of bull crap.
Right.
AIG's insurance arm was back then and is today very highly rated and well protected.
Right.
That bailout of AIG, AIG's first payment went to a wirehouse. Was it Morgan or Merrill? It was Morgan because Merrill got forcibly bought out by Bank of America. It was the big wirehouses, folks. All these big companies that want to take your money because they're brilliant at investing it, they're the ones that almost went under. Lehman Brothers, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch was forcefully sold to Bank of America, or they would have went under. The Thundering Herd would have died at a slaughterhouse. They're the ones who are being bailed out. And the first check went to, oh, damn it. What's the name of Goldman Sachs? That was it. Because the Treasury Secretary was the ex-CEO of Goldman Sachs. I can't remember his name. AIG gets bailed out, and the first $83 million, if I'm remembering correctly, and I could be wrong in these dollar amounts, goes to Goldman. It was bullshit. It was bailing out Wall Street. But they could come out and say, I'm bailing out Wall Street. But they could say, we're trying to help all these policyholders. Anyways, don't get me going on that.
No, it's possible if that side of AIG would have gone under. Who knows the ripple effects
they're
that would have happened.
Separately owned.
But they're
that
separate. They're so there's a wall between those, so separate, I can't imagine that would have leaked over. But that never made it into the press.
And what would have happened? Yep. AIG would have sold that line of business because it was very profitable and well-funded.
To somebody else.
And be forcefully used that money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like I said, large, solid insurance companies, I can't remember the last instance that was an issue. So.
So, anyways, that was his four questions, which became five questions, and then he ended it with, the Kulak Show with the lidocaine-induced speech impediment was hilarious and still very informative.
I forgot about the lidocaine. You'd come from the dentist.
I came from the dentist after
having
a crown.
That made those Kulak shows even better.
It just shows that I'm a trooper. I came with a numbed mouth and a fresh crown. It wasn't the crown, because you don't get numbed for that. It was that prep. Yeah. Did you ever get a crown?
No.
You got to go in there at first and they grind everything down and numb you
up.
Yeah,
let's not talk about that.
It was after that one. Mm. I came in and did the Kulak show with a numb mouth and Pete and Chris.
Mm-hmm. Laughed the whole time.
Laughed the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to talk.
Well, it's not like we ever laugh the way you talk.
We were laughing more.
So you filled an entire show with only, I guess that, does that count as like 18 questions with that one?
Technically, he asked one email, but four questions, which became five.
So we had a live caller and two emails, so we didn't hit our five email limit here, but we asked her a lot of questions.
How much time do we have left?
Zero.
Oh.
We're off past our hour already.
All right, well, wrap up, and we've got a big list of questions as well. Again, you can send us emails, and they get printed and put on my desk, and then I find them and read them, and we answer them. Or you can call, like the first George did from North Carolina, and talk to us live, and Chris will explain how you do that. But also, do remember, folks, Chris and I are both living, breathing, practicing financial planners in the state of Colorado. But we work with people throughout the United States. If you feel our approach and knowledge of retirement planning may be of benefit to you, don't hesitate to reach out and schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion. We are pretty busy lately, so getting us might not be as easy as you had hoped. Over the summer, Chris and I have both been doing a lot of traveling. But we try to make ourselves available as often as we can. And you can schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion and chat with us and see if there's a way we can help you. If there is, we'll explain how. And as I often tell people, if we don't feel we would be a good fit, we'll explain why and hopefully point you in the direction of a company that might be able to help you. But you'll never know unless you schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion. And you can do that by going to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. And click on the Contact Us button or schedule a meeting or something like that. And you can schedule it, or you can just get the phone number off the website and call the office and the lovely Shanana or...
it's just Shana. For
Shana.
Those.
I call her Shanana. Or don't tell me who the other one is.
Wow.
Laura. God, she'd be really ticked off if I forgot that name. Or Laura, one of the two, would be more than happy to take your phone call. But Chris is also going to explain to you how you can call the show live if you ever want to and get your question answered right away.
So that'll be next week. This week we're done. But next week, and the best way to get us is right before that. And you can even call ahead of time and let us know, and we can get the call set up right before the show starts. But the way to do that would be to call the office main line, 970-530-0556. Or you can shoot us an email and let us know you'd like us to give you a call during the show. That'd be an option. We haven't tried that, but I don't know why that wouldn't work. But again, if you want to call in live during one of these shows when we're streaming, which is usually between 1 and 1:30 is the start time, mountain time, on Tuesdays, just let us know and listen in at that time. Phone lines are open. As you've heard the last couple shows, we've had a live caller or two. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.